Elise Glinks here, the owner of ThinkLink Media and Best Money Moves. You can always click on thinklink.com. Hi, Elise.
Hey, John.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Nice to be here again. Yeah. And also, I'll be here tonight filling in for John Hansen.
I was just going to mention that. It's not just tonight, is it? Is it just tonight or more than one night?
Tonight and tomorrow.
Yeah, so I heard. We'll listen for that. But just something that kind of caught my eye, I was going to ask you about last week, and we didn't, but it's 3D printed homes. I remember when 3D printing became a thing, everybody was fascinated by it and then horrified of it because you could make a gun that way. But what's a 3D printed house?
Well, it's interesting, John. There's a special version of concrete, and basically you have a huge tube. Think of something that you would decorate a cake with, right? Put all the frosting in, and then it comes out in a really nice, smooth line. Well, make it much bigger, stuff it full of concrete, and then that's how you start to put in the material that goes around. So when I was at the National Association of Home Builders Conference a couple of weeks ago, I guess, we heard from a couple of manufacturers of 3D printed homes. And for a while, 3D printing, as you say, has been used for some interesting use cases. But they've been testing how to build homes this way. It's far less expensive than and faster than building a stick-built house. And you get this incredible R value, which is how you refer to how energy efficient these houses are. So what you're seeing is that there's a company called Icon, which has the 3D technology, which has partnered up with Lennar, which is a huge construction, home construction building company. And they're building 100 3D printed homes in a neighborhood just north of Austin. And the first six houses have just been listed. They were listed for between $476,000 and $566,000. They have another group of homes that they're building in the upper $900,000 range. So it's not like these are cheap houses, although you can build very inexpensive houses. And there's another group of these kinds of homes being built in Mexico right now for far less expensive prices. So it's just kind of interesting to watch this develop.
Are they made of concrete? Is it, instead of icing, is it actually pouring concrete?
Yeah, you can't eat these. It's not like, you know, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, where you can lick the walls. I wouldn't advise that, by the way. Yes, it's concrete, and there's actually rebar. So the structure is added to, you know, really hefty that way. And it only does, just to be clear, what it does is the foundation, mm-hmm. and it does the walls, and then a builder will come in and they have to build the rest of it.
Finish it inside, yeah.
They can get that done in 30% less construction time than for a traditional home.
Boy, it would be nice if that was mainstream now, given the dearth of homes. The housing stock is still down, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we'd love to see this technology get produced at scale. And this is really the next step, is to see if there's interest in these homes, how they build, how they actually sell. Icon is looking to really scale this across the country. Texas just seemed to be the place that they got started.
It reminds me of the story on the front page of the Tribune's real estate section over the weekend. And there is a TikToker from Chicago who posted a rant about how her rent went up. It's just outrageous, is the headline. And this woman, Alexa Kosior, K-O-S-I-O-R, I'm sure I'm pronouncing that wrong, is shown in her West Loop apartment. She is in a 350-square-foot studio, which I started to do the math in my head. That's a master bedroom for some of you. Actually, that's a master closet for some of you. 350 square foot studio apartment, and her rent's going up 38%. And the story is about how high rents are in Chicago. From March to June, the median monthly asking rent in Chicago went up more than $120, a 7.1% increase. For a unit that might have rented for $1,000, it's now $1,120, and the list goes on. The typical, according to Zillow, rent in Chicago is, in June, the typical cost of rent in Chicago was $2,200. I suppose none of that surprises you.
It doesn't. I just remind everybody that Chicago is probably the most affordable big city out there.
Yeah.
And people do pay crazy amounts all the time. I know somebody in New York City who is renting a 450-square-foot one-bedroom, if you could imagine, and they are paying something like $3,800 for that. So,
gosh. Yeah. Talking about rents, by the way, this listener just texted in, my daughter in New York City rents a studio for $3,600 a month. It's like the number that you just mentioned. Have you heard the term boutique camping? It's the best of both worlds, I say. You get relaxing, sometimes exciting outdoor camping experiences, but they combine it with the best of hotel amenities. So this is for Camp Aramone, by the way. Camp Aramone is about 90 minutes from downtown Chicago. It's out by Starbrook State Park. It's a little southwest of the city. And what they've done is you've got like this gorgeous, secluded natural landscape that's kind of rolling and wooded hills out there. There's the beautiful Vermilion River, which is a fast-running, very clear river in that area. So you're out there. But then you're in this safari-style tent that comes with your own personal outdoor deck, which is attached, and then a bonfire pit, and they give you the wood and the fixings for s'mores. It comes with air conditioning. You need that. A stocked mini bar. You need that. Luxury bedding, big comfy bed. It's a king-size bed. The dining is exceptional, too. You order off a menu, breakfast and dinner in a lodge, and they put an Airstream trailer in the meadow, and they serve coffee in the morning and signature cocktails at night. So let's get away from it all for a couple of nights or more. You can hike, fish, birdwatch, wade in the clear waters. 90 minutes from Chicago. Click on CampAramoni.com. Camp A-R-A-M-O-N-I. Camp Aramone. .com. It's 12:20 on WGN. We're talking to Elise Glink about 3D printed homes, about apartments and rents. Where were we, Elise?
Oh, I think we were going to talk about investing.
Yeah, well, that's interesting, isn't it? You said that the stock market has baked in an interest rate cut in September, right?
Yeah, that seems to be the case. And it's sort of interesting as you look at the numbers, the companies that are bringing in their reported earnings, you know, they haven't been, some have been good, not all of them though, right? So McDonald's said that their diners think prices are too high. They're trying to, you know, work on value. Ford, GM, Stellantis, they all have a daunting second half of the year. Their numbers don't look so great. That's the big automotive sector. You know, there's companies that are missing earnings left and right. And I think everybody is sort of saying that, you know, they're hearing the economy, it's growing, but it's slowing, right? It's both of these things. And so when you have that all baked into kind of some of the other numbers that we've seen, the unemployment rate has gone up just a little bit. We're seeing more people come into the market, but that number is floating up. That sets the stage for the Fed to be able to actually make a move and lower the interest rates a little bit. And I think the markets are expecting that to happen. Mm-hmm. So we're seeing some uneasiness, but it would be good for everybody if interest rates go down.
The discussions we've been having is don't wait too long. That is, if you wait for the numbers to get where you wanted them to be and then you lower rates, you've done it too late. You need to anticipate it so that you complete the soft landing we seem to be having.
Yeah, I think that is what everybody is hoping for. Well, actually, that's not true. There are some short sellers out there that are hoping that's not how it's going to be. But it looks like, you know, the Fed has been able to find a way, at least so far, to get to what's known as a soft landing. Only happened once before in financial history. If it happens again, I think everybody will be pretty amazed. But, you know, we want to see interest rates come down because there's a lot of different kinds of businesses that are depending on it. And while the headline businesses, right, we're hearing a lot about, you know, the McDonald's and retail chains and other things, there's a whole lot of small to mid-cap companies out there and even startups that have really stalled over the last 5 to 7 months as, you know, interest rates have remained high. I mean, after all, today, mortgage interest rates, 7% if you've got an 800 credit score, 7.5% if you have the average credit score, which is about little over 700.
Really? I'm sorry, I didn't realize that. That is, when we say, hey, the 30-year fixed is below 7, it's 6-something or whatever. Well, that's probably not true for most folks.
No, it isn't actually. And it's worth saying that also, you know, when the Freddie Mac numbers come out on Thursday, it's for the prior week. And so the mortgage, if you go to any search engine but Google and you type in mortgage interest rates today, they will give you what the mortgage rate is for, you know, the latest day that they have it. And you know, you'll see that there's a difference. Like it'll say credit score. Is your credit score 800 or is your credit score 700? And then you'll watch how mortgage interest rates, you know, just sort of flip around. So it is, you know, around 7%. But if you don't have a great interest rate, you'll see that bump up significantly.
The I'm just reading some notes here. The number of mortgages with delinquencies of 6 months or more fell to 2008 levels. I don't know if that's as good as it sounds or not, but I know that's a great concern. To Hochberg likes to get on that bus and say, you wait until some of these delinquent mortgages come due. Well, they're due, but I mean, until we start to see the consequences of them. What's your thought about that?
You know, I'm not worried at all about delinquencies. 2008 is before the Great Recession started. And the reason that so many mortgages went delinquent then is people lost their jobs. And right now, nobody's losing their jobs, really. I mean, there's a lot of opportunity out there. There was, the last time I checked, there were over 8 million jobs being advertised last month. That number looks very, very strong. So people are looking to hire, and people still have their jobs. They may be doing some quiet quitting, I don't know. But I'm not really worried about mortgage delinquencies. Remember also that the vast majority of people who have mortgages, like some number greater than 80%, have mortgage interest at 4% or below. And they're going to do everything they can to keep those mortgages in place. So delinquencies don't scare me as much as the number of people who want to buy homes and either can't find a home or can't afford one because interest rates are so high.
You noticed how Kamala Harris and her husband have been managing their money. What do you find?
Well, it's interesting. There's a good story about this. And I thought, you know, she's done a very smart job of managing her money, she and her husband, right? So whatever you think of, you know, the politics of it, set that aside. Let's focus on the green, the money, right? Apparently, she and her husband invest in a wide range of index mutual funds. I'm a huge fan of index mutual funds. Why? They beat managed funds more than 85% of the time. They're far cheaper to own than an actively managed fund. They easily help you diversify, right? You can buy the biggest 500 companies. You can buy international. You can buy global. You just want to make sure you don't have overlapping investments, that you're buying the same thing over and over again. Now, Kamala's mortgage apparently is 2.65%, so good on her, but she chose a 7-year adjustable rate mortgage rather than a 15-year or a 30-year fixed rate loan, and it's apparently going to reset in 2027, so it'll be interesting to see what she does with that at that time. And it's a big mortgage, too. It's somewhere between $1 and $5 million. When politicians release their personal financial statements, they typically give ranges rather than specifics. But anyway, $1 million to $5 million, I'd rather pay a low amount as well.
I'm surprised that she has a 2.65 7-year ARM. That is, if you moved into that house 2 years ago, you could have gotten it for 2.65 anyway. People now probably are interested in adjustable rate mortgages. What's the story on ARMs now?
Well, more people are using adjustable rate mortgages because they do lower your interest rate just slightly. But what a 7-year adjustable rate mortgage does is it's fixed for the first 7 years, and then it typically will adjust every year, or some of them do every 6 months. So it could jump up, but the amount that it can jump up is very limited, typically to 1 or 2 percentage points per year.
Right.
And so,
I wonder how many people live through that. I mean, isn't the gamble, if you will, that you'll just refinance it with a fixed rate mortgage when rates come down? You would ask for an ARM when rates are high, right?
Absolutely. I have to tell you, I wouldn't have chosen a 7-year adjustable rate mortgage, but I'm sure she had her reasons. Also, note that she has a very large mortgage. So when you're in the million plus range, you have different options and opportunities available to you, typically through maybe your investment company, or, you know, even when you go to apply, like you're just more limited and targeted, and yet you have different opportunities. It may be that that was the best option and a 30-year wasn't available to her.
I just see we're out of time. We'll finish this and other investing stories, especially on the real estate side, next week. Elise Glink is the owner of Think Glink Media and Best Money Moves. Thanks, Elise.
You bet.
The triathlon in Chicago, in which 8,500 athletes will be participating, is an amazing thing, and we'll tell you about that in about 10 or 15 minutes. Right now, though, we're talking to Jim Dahlke. Will you be competing in the Chicago Tri, by the way, Jim?
Hey, John. I will not, no.
That ends that part of the conversation, then. Yeah, you are the Director of Communications at TechNexus Venture Collaborative. You always update us on technology and ventures and the funding for it. So what's the latest on the funding these days?
Yeah, John. So last week was Tech Chicago Week, a big kind of week-long event series where lots of folks in the city's tech and startup communities got together and had different events and panels and networking opportunities where people from startup investors to founders and sort of everyone in between can get together and kind of talk about the state of the state. Funding is slowly creeping back to kind of pre-pandemic levels and kind of getting back to that accelerated timeline that we saw according to investors who are in Chicago. So, at one panel, an investor at Long Jump, which is a venture capital firm here in Chicago, they said that at the end of last year, it was basically impossible to close a seed round of funding. So this is that early, early round of funding that startups are looking to raise. It was taking 9 months or longer to close these funding rounds at the earliest stages for local startups, which is a really, really long time. We are starting to see that timeline accelerate, which is, a good sign and an indication that the venture capital dollars that were, maybe sitting on the sidelines over the last couple of years are starting to slowly be put to work. And so that's good news for startups who are looking to close deals and seeing kind of an increased, deal-making activity, that's more money off the sidelines and into the pockets of Chicago startups.
What's the area that the money is going to? Is there a sector that's favored right now?
Yeah, artificial intelligence continues to stay very hot. That's certainly an area that investors are really looking to put money into. But one, takeaway that we're starting to see and that investors are noticing is that, the quality of startups that are getting funded are very high. In 2020, money was very easy to come by. Lots of startups could raise funding. The barrier is a lot higher now, which means that the companies that are getting funding, have really good fundamentals. These are businesses that are kind of really on track and are kind of really rising above. So what you're seeing here is that the companies who are able to raise are raising at high valuations because they're more promising businesses. So we'll see how that trend continues.
But if those tend to be better bets, then who's chasing whom? Are the companies petitioning the angel investors, or are the angel investors seeing some of these are pretty good bets, more begging those companies, no, take my money, I want to be a part owner of your firm?
Oh yeah, it's all of the above. Startups are out pitching, but the investors are out to look for the best deals. And so, certainly what local investors are hoping for here in Chicago is to connect with some of the talented local startups that are making moves. And so certainly it's both ends of the spectrum there.
Quantum computing continues to be a story in the state. What's the latest on that?
Yeah, so the big news last week, is how the state and really the city continue to kind of establish itself as, this next global hub for quantum computing. So PsiQuantum, which is a California quantum tech company, last week was named the anchor tenant at the recently established Illinois Quantum Microelectronics Park at the former U.S. Steel Southworks property on the south side. So PsiQuantum is going to take up about 300,000 square feet of space, where it's going to kind of really be this premier tenant in what will ultimately be a $500 million program here in Chicago to build out quantum computing over the next 30 years. So, we've been talking often about how quantum computing is sort of this next big tech wave that Chicago and Illinois believe that they can be poised to really capture. It's a big part of J.B. Pritzker's initiative here locally is to grow the quantum, infrastructure here in Chicago, and this facility on the south side here on the lake is going to be a really big piece of that. There's a lot of different quantum programs that are in the works right now. There's a group called Duality, which is the first startup accelerator connected with the University of Chicago specifically for quantum computing. And so there's a lot of momentum here, and this is just continuing that here with PsiQuantum going to call Chicago home.
Oh, this isn't our Foxconn or something, you know, where they say we got a campus, a lot of money's going to come, there'll be a million jobs, and then it doesn't happen. That happened in Wisconsin. I wonder how sure all of this is going to be.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great point. And certainly folks are very, very hopeful that that's not going to be the case, right? I mean, I think everyone is looking to not follow along in the traps of how Foxconn sort of worked out for the state of Wisconsin. So certainly no, but you know, the company expects its operations in Chicago will create at least 150 jobs over the next 5 years.
What's GeoWealth?
Yeah, so this is a Chicago startup, GeoWealth. Just raised $18 million in new funding. So we were talking about, you know, startups continuing to look to land that next funding round. Here's a great example of that. This is a fintech platform, so a financial technology startup here. They create a tech platform where they sell their offerings to registered investment advisors, specifically financial advisors around IRAs. And so they've got $18 million in the bank. Some big names behind this investment round, BlackRock was an investor in this platform. JP Morgan, also an investment and investor in this funding round. Lots of growth for GeoWealth here. They've grown to over 100 employees and about 45% growth year over year. So there's a nice growth traction there. And they actually expect to be profitable by the end of this year, which is not something you always see a growth venture-backed tech startup, but they're aiming for profitability in the end of 2024.
So a financial advisor might buy this software. Is that what it is?
That's exactly right. So this is software for financial advisors, specifically for IRAs. And so what they say, they've got about $28 billion in assets from 180,000 accounts and about 200 IRAs on its platform.
Wow. Okay. More about that down the road. Maybe it's 1243. It's always nice to talk to you. Thank you, Jim.
Thanks, John.
That's Jim Dahlke. You hear him most Mondays on this show, the Director of Communications at TechNexus Venture Collaborative. We've got more business news on the Wintrust Business Lunch with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Suburban-based Abbott Laboratories has been ordered to pay nearly $500 million in a case involving its baby formula. The jury award came in a lawsuit that alleged Abbott's premature infant formula causes a potentially fatal bowel disease. A jury made the award in a St. Louis case. It's one of more than 1,000 similar cases against Abbott and other formula makers. Responding after the verdict, Abbott says it strongly disagrees and will pursue all avenues to get the erroneous decision overturned. Chicago-based McDonald's missed expected revenue and earnings in the second quarter, and sales declined for the first time since 2020. McDonald's reported sales dropped 1% compared to last year. Each of the chain's geographic segments saw declines. Analysts say a decline in foot traffic in the U.S. was offset by higher prices. McDonald's revenue was just under $6.5 billion, shy of the $6.6 billion that Wall Street was expecting. The earnings report suggests that consumers no longer see fast food as a good deal. McDonald's recently revived a $5 meal deal, but too late for the second quarter earnings report. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Okay, Steve Alexander, the business of food, please.
Yeah, thank you. And my cousin, Jeff Alexander, is on the phone. How's the family?
Everyone's doing great. Appreciate the ask.
Yeah, I was just kidding about us being related, but we both love food and music, and there will be plenty of both at Lollapalooza this weekend, and Jeff will be there again.
This will be our 13th year in a row.
More about that after I thank the Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com for sponsoring us today. There's never been a better time to put a Silverado in your toolbox. Okay, Jeff Alexander, no relation. You are
president and CEO of Wow Bow.
I like to say that Jeff and his team put the wow in Bow, and they'll be set up again in Chowtown at Lala.
Our very first year, we spent more time being out of food than serving food because we did not know what to expect.
They figured it out. And now?
We go through about 30,000 pieces of Bow over the 4 days.
Challenges include the weather.
We've been there three times where we've been evacuated because of lightning and weather, and that's always difficult, you know, the safety and keeping everyone together and finding a place to once you exit the park, and then also getting back into the park and getting reset up to turn back on is always a challenge. The heat, is a challenge because you're inside the tent. It's hot inside the tent. There's smoke and grease from some of the other people that are working. We don't have any of that in, from the way that we cook our food. But the fun and the excitement outweighs the challenges.
Bao, spelled B-A-O, by the way. It's kind of perfect for eating on the go.
Yep, exactly. No sauce, no silverware needed, no napkins needed.
And pot stickers, too.
We do five pieces in a box, and I think we're going through almost 10,000 pot stickers over the course of the time as well.
And
we also bring breakfast bao in the morning. We feed all the other vendors in our area as sort of like, hey, let's all get ready for the day and have a great show together.
More than 100 food stands are going to be scattered across Lala, featuring some of Chicago's favorite makers of pizza and Italian beef and much, much more. And away from Lala, Wow Bao has been piling up wins in the frozen food aisles of America.
Yeah, we started 2023 with 350 grocery stores selling our product frozen, and we ended 2023 with about 6,000 grocery stores, and we're on track to be at 10,000 by the end of this year.
And
all of our product is made here in the United States. The bulk of our product is made in this great state of Illinois.
It all started
with a 350 square foot store at Water Tower Place.
Wow, Bao, ready for another busy weekend at Lollapalooza.
Yeah, it's 4 days, and I've opened probably 30 restaurants. Lollapalooza is a lot harder to open than a restaurant is, but the fun and the energy outweighs anything else that you could be doing for those 4 days.
On the food calendar, today's National Chicken Wing Day. It's also National Lasagna Day. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
This is WGN. Scott Nilsson is the SuperTri General Manager of North America. In a couple of weeks, we're going to see 8,500 maybe athletes competing in a triathlon in the city. Hey, Scott, you're on the air. How are you?
I'm great.
This will make it the biggest one in North America. Do I read that right?
Yes, with 8,500 athletes, it's the largest triathlon in North America. And we're excited to be back for our 41st year.
45 states, 20 countries. I have a vision in my mind of this happening at the lake. This is that one, right, where everybody's swimming and then they get out of the water and jump on the bikes?
That's right. They jump in the lake first, go for a swim, head up out and into transition onto their bikes, go for a nice long ride, and then finish with the run. And we've got multiple distances this year. So we've got an event for kids up at Foster Beach on Saturday. We've got a short distance for adults and kids alike up there as well. And then on Sunday, we've got our sprint and international distances.
I see. Maybe I'll do the short one. What are the numbers on that? How far do I got to swim, bike, and ride?
The short one is a quarter-mile swim, about a six-mile bike, and a 1.5-mile run.
Huh. And then what's the other one?
The longest is a 1.5-kilometer swim, a 40-kilometer bike, and a 10-kilometer run. So we've got a race for everyone.
Now, you call that a super tri, but that's not a marathon or half marathon. And, you know, can you just give me some context? Where does this fit into the grand scheme of things then?
Well, we've got three different races for mass participation, so anybody can sign up and run. That's the first one that we talked about, so I'm going to see you out there on Saturday.
Right.
The sprint, which is a half-mile swim, 15-mile bike, and 3-mile run, and then the longer international distance, which I mentioned. We're also doing something very unique this year. So for the first time, we're bringing in a pro race. So it's a closed race with four different teams. Each team has four professional men, four professional women, and they will ride after the races on Sunday in a very unique format that is essentially three mini triathlons back-to-back. So they swim, bike, run, and they do that three times.
Huh.
And this will be the second tour in a five-race series across the globe. The first event will be in Boston. From Boston, we'll move up to Chicago, and many of these athletes will be coming fresh off the Olympics.
Wow, so that kind of caliber of athlete. What's the best way to view this then? Where would you suggest when they're transitioning from the water to land or at the finish line of the whole event? What's a good way to watch this?
Yeah, what's great is this race is really designed for viewing. It's first of all, it's free, So come on down to, I think the area is called Queen's Landing, just in front of Buckingham Fountain.
Sure.
And that's where the transition is, the start and the finish. So everything sort of takes place right in that area. So if you come on down, you'll be able to see the exciting transitions and all the different phases of the event. It's also going to be streamed and broadcast globally in multiple countries. So there are many ways to enjoy this. And this year we're hoping that many of our athletes who come down to race themselves in the morning will then walk down after the finish festival and catch all or part of these really exciting races.
How do you manage the swim then? Where do they start and how do they finish? How do you do that?
No, there'll be a floating dock just off the water and buoys. So they'll swim essentially like a rectangle. They'll jump in at one point out around the buoys and then back up to the dock, and then they'll have a short little jog over to the transition area where they'll put on their bike shoes and jump on their bikes and head out.
What's the prize?
There's over $1 million of prizes, which are basically awarded at the end of the season. There are prizes for the top teams and individuals, as well as we recognize those who do very well in a specific discipline. So there's a special additional prize for whoever is the best swimmer for the whole season.
So this is Sunday, August 25th. If I were to participate in one of those smaller versions, would that be on Saturday then?
Saturday we have the kids triathlon and what we call the super sprint. So that's Saturday the 24th up at Foster Beach. And then Sunday the 25th is the sprint and the international or Olympic versions of the event, which take place Sunday morning and finish right there in Grand Park.
Yeah, yeah. And then where are they riding the bikes and running? Are they on city streets then, I guess? Huh? Or are they doing it up and down the parkway?
No, they are doing it on various city streets. So those streets are blocked. Well, for the Saturday event, it's all contained within the park. For the Sunday events, it is up and down various pieces of Lakeshore Drive. And the run is along the path that goes along the lakefront there down to Shedd Aquarium and then back up through Grant Park.
All right. Scott, I'm out of time, but if somebody wants to find out more, sign up, supertri.com, SUPERTRI.com. Is that the best way to do it?
That's right. Or if you just Google the Chicago Triathlon, you can also get a link to the pages that has information about our age group races. And we hope people will sign up because we are expecting many of the distances to sell out this year.
Yeah, 8,500 folks they're talking about here in this event. Wow. Okay, Scott Nielsen, Super Tri General Manager, North America, supertri.com.